We're starting on the two dots on Kufnun. It's just before the lines get wider. Pshita. The Gemara says it's a given. Amar, if he says, metautali laplanya, you know, my possession to so-and-so. So that means, kol mane tashmish de kani. That means that he's taking possession of all of his, you know, utensils in the house. Levar, except for chite visare. Except for, you know, meaning that the items that are in the utensils are not there, things that you store are not there, but the items themselves, all utensils are there included. On the other hand, if you have to that, or you do a more inclusive type of lashon, which is, ko metaltalai laplanyo, all of my possessions are to so-and-so, afilu chite visare, then it includes even the wheat and the barley, vafilu rechaim el yona, and even the upper millstone, because these are items that are movable, removable, and therefore they're going to be included in all, because of the extra word of kol, they'll be included in all utensils or all of my possessions. Kana. Levar, what's excluded from that is merichaim atachtona, the lower millstone. Lower millstone is usually heavier or fixed in place. That's something that doesn't usually move. But if you say the lashon of kol metaltalai dimetaltel, that any metaltalai that move at all whatsoever, then afilu rechaim atachtona kani. That additional lashon would include even the lower millstone in this instance. So here, by each time that you increase the lashon or somehow more inclusive in the lashon, that'll include more and more items that are he is intending either to gift as a shchimira or here in a transaction for a bari, that the intention of what he's referring to will be greater and greater depending on the lashon that you use over here. Right, the Rishvan points out here that also when we exclude things like wheat and barley, you'd also exclude things like animals. Things that are, right, not, when he talks about mental delight, means my utensils, meaning things that I use for utility in the house, not necessarily that animals or other things that I own. And, alright, so over here now, we have Yibailahu. Avto kimikarko o kimitautavodomi. Do avadim have a status like karko? Or do they have a status like mitaltalin? So now the Rishbam says, okay, what's the question here? Why do we mean that is an eved like karko, is an eved like mitaltalin? We have many places in Shas where the Gemara knows, says that eved is a din of karko. So there the Rishbam says, nehi, vadai, da'avda mikarko ke dami. It's clear that an eved has a din of karko, li'inyan shvua, v'kinyan b'kesef u'shtar v'chazaka. For anything that deals with shvua min haTorah or kinyan kesef shtar chazaka, d'chom milei d'oraita din mekarkei yesh lahem. Any Torah law, the avodim have a din of karka to them, because v'hid nachaltem. Learn that from the pasuk that says that you can be morish, you can bequeath avodim to your children. So that means that they're just like karka. So there's no question about their status being of karka. So what is the question over here? About the Indian Yoshon B'nei Adam. The question here is about how people refer to Avadim, Mikru. Who? Metaltali. Do they call them Metaltali movable objects? V'yeshlam b'chlal matanat Metaltali. And therefore they include it. When someone grants all their Metaltali to the individual, do they include the Avadim? Or, no, or maybe not. Maybe that the same way that the Torah defines them as Karka, people also view them in that light as Karka. So that's an important distinction. The Rishbam makes the distinction here between dinei doraita or halachic ramifications, where it's clear that an eved has a din of karka. On the other side here, we're talking about what do people, what's the umdino of what people mean when it comes to metaltele? Do they include abadim? Because even though maybe they have a halachic status of karka, they're still different than karka. They move, they get up, right? They have a very different feel than what we call real property, where it's there forever. You can't move. You can't lose it. You can't run away. That's not true of an eved. So maybe people view avadim like metaltalim. I will say that Tosus and other places we've seen this before says that that also that equation that avadim are like karka is not also a all inclusive or encompassing relationship, because we see, for instance, we had this in Baba Kama, we had it in Baba Metzia, that the Gemara, when it wants to exclude certain items from a halacha, so for instance, like from Shvua or from Kefel, the Gemara says, okay, we have this miut to teach you no karka, we have this miut to teach you no avadim, and this miut to teach you no shtarot. Now wait, if an eved is a din of karka, why do you need a separate miut for avadim as opposed to karka. So you have to say, there's two possibilities. One possibility is that avadim are different than karka. Even if you classify them as karka, they still have a different form. We'll see a little bit today about that, that they have a different form of karka. Or, you have to say, in those cases, there might have been a havamina to include them for whatever other reason, and therefore you need an additional miut. So now, the Gemara's question is, Ibailu, abda kima karka or kima tal tuladami? So amalei ravacha breidurav abyudu ravashi tashma. Hamocher et ha'ir, so we've seen this, we saw this together before in the early in the Masechta. Person who sells the city, machar batim shichim u'me'arot, he sells all the houses, the cisterns, the caves, u'marktaot, bathhouses, u'batei abadin, the olive presses, the beit ha'shlachim, and the fields that are watered. Avalo et ha'metaltalin, but nothing that is a movable object in the city. Uzman shamar he v'chol mashiv tochav, he sells the city plus everything that's in it. Then, afilu ayuba behema uvadim, are hegulan mechurin. Even if there were animals and avadim in there, right, everything was sold. So, iyamar bishlama kmetaltaludami. If you say that avadim have a classification like metaltalim, then, mishum hachidom izdavim bereisha. That's why when you simply sell the city, they're not included. Because what's included when you sell the city? Anything that is a part of the mechubar, the karka of the city, that's what's included. So any objects that are fixed, that are stationary within the city, that's included. But avadim are not because they are metaltalin. Then, when it comes along and you said anything and everything that's in it, the avadim will be included. Ela, yamart ki mekarka dami, if you think they're like land, the mailom is davin. Why aren't they included in the original sale when you say the city is sold? Why aren't they a part of the city? Belamai. So what do you want to suggest now? Kimetaltal dami? That they're like metaltalin, these avadim? My afilu. Then why is it afilu? What do you mean afilu? Of course, if they're metaltalin, they're included akol ma shebetocha. It sounds like the Mishnah is indicating that, oh, if you say akol ma shebetocha, you get everything in it, even the animals and the avadim. Why is it even? If they're metaltalin, it should be, of course, they're included in ma shebetocha. What do you have to say? Even if you call them metaltalin, shiny metaltalin denayit, metaltalin delonayit. You have to differentiate between metaltalin that move and metaltalin that don't move. Meaning that metaltalin that don't move, when you say a'ir b'chol b'shamar tocha, everything that's in it, of course they're included. Then the Mishnah comes to teach you the chiddush, afilu beheiman, afilu evid. Those are two metaltalim that are not stationary. They can move. They're not necessarily, even if you say they're in the city, they don't have to stay in the city. They can move, and they can leave the city. So maybe they wouldn't be included. The Mishnah teaches you, yes they are. So then if that's the case, you've differentiated now, you have three categories. You've kind of a karka, you have metaltalim, and then you have metaltalim deny it. Wait, if you can already be mefatzel, you can bifurcate metaltalim to be metaltalim that are stationary, metaltalim that are not stationary. You can do the same thing under the context or the category of karka. And you can say, afilu temer ki mekarka dami. Let us say that avodim have a din of karka. But shayna mekarka, denayit mekarka delonayit. Right? You have to differentiate between land that is stationary and land that moves. I mean that even if you say that avodim are karka, they're still different. No matter how similar they are in halachic terms to karka, they still are different than karka in the sense that they move and that they are able to stand up and walk away. So that, even then, you could explain this Mishnah based on the fact that the avadim are karka, but they're a different form of karka. There's karka that's stationary and there's karka that's denied. Amar le Ravina le Ravashi. So Ravina says, Tashma, I'll bring a proof from here. A kotev kol nechasav le avdo. Person writes all of his possessions to his evid. We had this yesterday. Af yatzav ben chorin. He goes free because he acquires himself and all the possessions in one shot. He gains his own freedom, plus he takes possession of all the property. Shear karko koshu, if he leaves over any property, right, this is according to the Tanakh, lo yatsa ben chorin. Doesn't go free. Why? Because we're afraid by leaving over any karko that he also left. Karko, but could refer to the Evid himself. So if he leaves any amount of the Evid, then that's a problem. That you're always classified, the Evid goes free, no matter what, as long as you specify what the exception is. If you specify Karka as the exception, you didn't specify Evid, so the Evid goes. The only time the Evid doesn't go is when you say, all my possessions, except for 1/10,000. Because over there, you didn't define what you're leaving out. If you didn't define what you're leaving out, that 1/10,000 could be the Evid, or part of the Evid, and therefore you won't go free. So, Achumar, he says, "V'amar Rav Dimi bar Yosef, Amar Rabbi Elazar, asum metaltalim shiur etzel eved, v'lo asum metaltalim shiur etzel ktuba." So over there we see that metaltalim are a shiur etzel eved, and not by ktuba. We had this in yesterday's daf, which means that if you leave over metaltalim, then we still consider the possibility that you meant part of the Eved. Well, now you're using a term of metaltalim. You left over a certain percentage of your metaltalim, and now we're saying the Eved doesn't go free. Why? Because we're afraid you left over a portion of the Eved. You didn't give him his entire or total freedom. So if you didn't do that, what do you see? You see that even though the balabait, or the owner, the baal, referred to him as a metaltalin, we still consider the possibility that he's referencing to the Eved. So now you see an equation between Eved and metaltalin. So that metaltalin are sufficient to be considered a shiur, a leftover piece by an Eved, meaning that they will say that the Eved didn't gain his full freedom because there's a piece of him left over. But that won't be true by Ketubat Isha. Ketubat Isha is the case where the husband grants his wife, Isha ben Abanim, amongst the children, he grants her a piece of property. If she gets property, then she forfeits her ketubah. If she accepts the piece of property along with her other children, she forfeits her ketubah. That's only true by karka, not true by metaltalin. Why? Because the ketubah is built around taking its payment through karka. That's the whole collateral for the ketubah is the karka. And therefore she would not, right, be mochelet, or she would not allow the shibud to be forgiven on the ketubah unless she's given karka, which is what she's entitled to in the ketubah. But metaltalin would not suffice. I mentioned this yesterday, I think possibly according to the Geonim that we saw, Tosus quotes them on Kuf Chavav, and the Rashbam quotes them on Sanal Zayin Amud Aleph about the Geonim that suggest that today we collect ketubah even from metaltalin, that they change because of the nature of economic production and success were changed from being purely agrarian to people being in business and traders. So that's how they made their monies. So therefore they made it that the ketubah also had a lien on the metaltalim, not just on the karka. So if you say that, it might be true the other way around, which is that if the woman accepts metaltalim, it might be a replacement of ketubah because her ketubah now entitles her not only to karka, but also entitles her to metaltalim. Alright, so now, continuing the Gemara. Vamalei Rovel Rav Nachman, my taima. What is the reason that metaltalin, if you leave over metaltalin, that's considered a residual by the Eved? And why is it not this case by the Ketubah? So he says, because Avda metaltalahu. Avadim are metaltalin. Umetaltala de metaltala bishur. So if an Eved is classified as a metaltalin, then if you leave over metaltalin, it's possible that you get the residual in the Eved, because metaltalin can be a residual for other metaltalin. Uktubat isha mikarkahu. The Ketubat Isha is a din of karka, not literally that it is karka, but its whole collection process and the whole, right, the lien of the Ketubah is relying on the fact that there's karka on real property. Therefore, umetaltalim karka lo avishur. When it comes to metaltalim are not a residual when it comes to karka. And therefore, if he gives her metaltalim, right, or if he leaves over metaltalim, right, then That's not going to void her ketubah in any way. And now the Gemara says, so based on this, we have pretty strong proof that what? That Avadim have a din of metaltalin. Now the Tosfos says the same thing that the Rishbam says again, that it's, when we say that it's metaltalin over here, we mean b'dinei adam, meaning that l'shon b'nei adam. We're not asking about the din d'oraisa, right? So we're not asking any dinim, right, that have halachic implications. Halachic implications are that karka and eved are equal, or equated. But when it comes to lashon b'nei adam, which we're dealing with over here, where he leaves over residual in his property of metaltalin, does he mean the eved? Does he include, would he possibly have meant that he's leaving a residual within the eved? Gemara says, no, you don't have to say this. Why? Because you misunderstood the machlokas between the Chachamim and Rav Shimon and Rabbi Shimon over here. Now we used it yesterday. We used it in a different sense yesterday. We used the same machlokas between them to describe over there to ask whether anytime you say karka, it really means karka dafka. Over here today we tried to use it again to explain their machlokas that they're really talking about metaltalin, and the whole machlokas here is what do you mean when you leave a residual? Here comes the Gemara's conclusion about what their machlokas is really about. What's their machlokas really about? Amalei, Anan, Bishum Delav Krut Gita Matninana. We explain the machlokas between Tanakama and Rav Shimon having nothing to do with the fact that karka, metaltale, there's nothing to do with that. It has to do with one thing. One question that they're discussing is, what's considered a total severing of the relationship? When you give a get, This is true by get isha, that you have to sever all relationship or ties between the two parties. The husband can have no residual interest in his wife. If he has any residual interest in his wife, it's not a get. Not a get. Kritut. Kritut means to sever completely. We know from the Gemara in Kiddushin, la la, that there's a gzera shava between an eved, right, and a isha, in the sense that a get shichur works like a get kritut of a isha. So that's the same thing by an eved. When you want to free an eved, it has to be a total and complete severing of the relationship between the adon, the owner, and the eved. So that's, in that case, so now what do you have here? You have the explanation that kritut gamur binan. You need a complete and total kritut over here. Because, so if this person leaves over some metaltalin over here, how do we know that he didn't think about leaving over some portion of the eved? If he's leaving some portion of the eved, it has nothing to do with the metaltalin or karka or whatever, but that might mean that he's leaving over some residual ownership in the eved. Any residual ownership in the eved will undermine the get kritut, and therefore he won't go free. Now, the Rav Shimon comes along and says, no. As long as he defines what the residual is, then he's not undermining the, right? He's not undermining the eved. We plug in Dibur, we look at one thing that he's leaving over is the karko, and then we look at the eved. The eved didn't leave anything over. That's a get key truth. There he is totally and completely severed. And therefore, he will go free at that point in time. So the machlokas doesn't revolve.
Let's say he specifies 1/1000. What does that do?
No, if he says 1/1000, Rabbi Shimon says, then he doesn't go free, because then we're afraid he left over residual in the eved. And if he leaves it,
specifying increases.
What?
It still isn't specific enough.
No, that's right. According to Rabbi Shimon, you don't go free in that case, because 1/10,000, you don't define what you're leaving the 1/10,000 of over. Rabbi Shimon says that if you say karka, then we know you don't mean eved. You say, if you define what you're leaving over, then you didn't mean an eved. Shimon says the only time the eved doesn't go free is when you don't define what the residual is, because then we're afraid that the residual was left by the eved. Alright, so this is not, again, this is what Rav Nachman responded to Rava. Rava is saying, in this case, I can explain to you machlokes between Tanakam and Rav Shimon. It's about whether they have a din of metaltalim or not, right? Metaltalim can be a shiur for metaltalim, that's an eved is a metaltel. And that's not true by karka. And Agon comes, Rav Nachman says, I'll tell you you're wrong. It has nothing to do with this. The issue by eved is about get kritut. Has to do with severing a relationship. And severing a relationship, you have to sever it entirely. You can't have any residuals. And that's the problem here. The problem here is if you leave any residual here, doesn't matter how or what the residual is, that residual, no matter how small it is enough to undermine the kritut get. And therefore, we don't want to, you're not going to go free. Nothing to do with metaltalin, karka. It's not defining what an eved is. It's telling you what you need, or what's necessary to free the eved, and that's a get kritut. So Amar Rav Nachman, Chamisha ad shichtavu kol nichsehem. There are five people until they write away all their possessions that they have a different din. Meaning that the din between when they write away all, they give kol nichsai, all their possessions different than when they give away a portion of their possessions. What is that? This is a good chazara. It's a chazara on, here we got five things covered. Yishno chlim in this parak. We're going to chaz over all the dinim that we learned. Be'elohen, these are they. Shchimera. One, Abdo, two, Ishto, three, Banav, four, and Mavrechet is five. So let's go through each one of them. Shchimera. Shchimera Ditznan. We had a Mishnah. We just had our Mishnah. Shchimera Shekotav Kol Nechasav L'Acherim V'Shier Karka Koshu. Writes away all of his possessions, but leaves over any karka. Matanato Kayemet. His matana goes through, whether he survives or doesn't survive. Matana goes through, because he left over for himself a residual. That means that he already considered the possibility that he would live. That's the case. When he gave the matana, he gave it fully. Lo shir karka gosho ein matanato kayemet. He leaves nothing over. It's a full gift. But if he survives, then he takes the gift back. Because that means that he gave the gift without considering the possibility of surviving. He didn't consider the possibility of surviving. It's an omdana that he only intends to give the gift if he passed away. In fact, if he didn't pass away, we reverse the gift. So that's the first call. It's the difference between if he gives a portion or he gives all of it. Abdo. It's not. This is our Mishnah. If he gives him all of his possessions, he goes free. Because that means he granted the eved his freedom and all of his possessions at the same time. Shir karko koshu, if he leaves over any residual in the karko, lo yatsa ben chorin, he doesn't go free. So here's the difference between granting the entirety and a portion of it. Ishto. The Amar of Yudamar Shmuel, kotev kol nechasav l'ishto, lo asa ela apitropa. Person who gives all of his possessions to his wife, he does not gift her, he's not giving her anything, he's not granting her anything. He's just making her the executor of the estate. Remember, this goes back to the Shlosha Dvarim, right? right? Shloshim dvarim she'in ba'in tama, right? That have no reason that the chachamim established. This is one of those that was given, which is what that a person who writes all his possessions to his wife, we don't grant it as a gift. We say he did lekavod, and he married the executor of the state. That's only true if he gave her all of his possessions, because that's an indication that doesn't make sense that a person would disinherit his children and give all his possessions to his wife. So if he does that, that's an indication that he wants to be the executor and not the owner of the property. If he doesn't give all, then that's not true. Next, we have Banav, his children. Ditznan. Kutev kol nechasav v'vanav, v'ketav l'ishto karka koshu, avdak tubata. Again, if he bequeaths to his wife, amongst the children, all the property that he owns, and his wife is given a piece of property along with the other children, then avda ktubata, she loses her ktubah. But on the other hand, if he leaves over any property in his possession, then what? The woman can go and claim her ktubah from the residual, and because she can claim her ktubah from the residual, she can go then and claim from everything, even the children's the property that was given to the children. If you remember in the Gemara said that if he leaves over one dekel, the Gemara talked about if she leaves over one palm tree, she can say, because you left over the palm tree, I thought, oh, you left me a residual to collect from it. I didn't know how much the palm tree was worth, so I didn't know how much to make the claim for against the children. That's why I was quiet. But as long as there was something within the estate that he leaves over that she can claim her ketubah from, if she claims her ketubah from that, she can go back and then collect from the children. She does not lose the rights of her ketubah. She doesn't lose the rights of her shibud. So that means that only if he grants all of his possessions, is it the case that she loses her ktubah because he left no residual from which to collect the ktubah from. If he leaves over anything in the estate, the fact that the woman has a right to collect from that, migo that she has a right to collect from, she has a migo to go back after the children and take away the property that was granted to them because she didn't, there was no reason to believe that she was mochelet in this case because she knew she had something to collect from and she knew she had to go to Beis Din to assess what was left in the estate versus what she had to collect from the other, from the children themselves. Alright, now, the next case is Mavrechet. Next case of Mavrechet is a case of basically a prenuptial agreement. It's a case where the woman is marrying and she already is a wealthy woman and she does not want her possessions to go to her next husband. Why? If she gets married and did nothing and passes away, her husband will be Yorish, will inherit her. So she does not want that to happen with all her possessions. So how does she get her possessions, basically, I mean, like in a prenuptial agreement, right? How do you put your possessions into a trust of some sort so that they cannot, the husband can't gain access to them? So this is what you do. Damar, mar. Mavrechet shricha shichtichtov. She has to write. Kol nechaseh. She has to write all of her possessions. So now, in order to free herself, in order to eliminate the possibility of her husband getting any part of it, she has to write away or gift away all of her possessions. So if you look in the Reshban, so quickly in the Reshban, so you can see this inside, it's three lines from the, once you get to the wide lines, three lines up in the narrow lines. V'amrina b'ktubot, it's three lines up in the narrow lines, once you get down to the bottom of those wide lines. V'amrina b'ktubot, shricha shetichtov kol nechaseh l'acher stam. She has a gift, grant, all of her possessions to a third party. Came into Loshayir Mide, since she left nothing over for herself. Anan Sade, Delonat Nalazeh, Ella Bishvio Shrozeli Naseh. The only reason she gave this gift to this third party is because she can go and marry. Ushul Tirzeh, Yakzerula. And what she wants, she'll get it back. Avalim Shaira Koshu, if she leaves over any residual for herself of her possessions, then Kanaha Mekabel Matana. That the one who received it now gets it as a gift and can keep it and do what else. Below Yachzrula Kol Nechasim and has no right obligation to return it to the woman. Olamit forever. V'zeh davar einu katuv b'gemara kach el mechlolosh meinana. He says it's not explicit in the Gemara, but that it's from Mechla. We can infer it from the case. And here he brings down the machlokas here between the Chachamim and Rishon Gamliel. From now we can infer the fact that if she gives away all of her possessions, that means that we know why she's doing this. Why would anybody ever give away all their possessions to someone else when they're getting married? There's no reason for her to do this except to protect her possessions from going into the possession of her husband. So she grants it. So if that's clear, we have an umduna, just like we have in our Mishnah, it's an umduna if someone gives away all their possessions when they're on their deathbed, and then they survive, that they didn't intend to give it away, because they intended to give it away, because they thought they were going to die. This woman too, she gave away her possessions, because she wants to stop her husband from getting possession of them. But that doesn't mean she really wants that to be a permanent case. She wants to know that in the future, when she gets them, she can have them back. So that's the case here too. But if she leaves over any residual for herself, just like in our Mishnah, she leaves over, he leaves over residual, that means he's considered the possibility he won't survive. And here too, the woman's considering the possibility she won't get it. If she's leaving something over, that means she thinks she may not get her possessions back. And that means that she's going to give him as a full gift to this individual, and she's keeping what she needs for herself. So she does that. She can't go back and get whatever she gave away to protect herself from going to her husband. She can't go get those back. Again, if she says it explicitly, it's not a problem. The problem here is that she's just doing it without stating what the purpose of her giving it away is. She's just giving it and doesn't say that's to protect against my husband. Right? If she says it, then there's nothing to talk about. The problem here is that we're doing an umdana. We're trying to assess, or we're trying to intuit what this woman was trying to do. And if that's the case, we only do it in a case where it's obvious, or umdana the mukhaf, that she gave away all her possessions. That won't be true if she keeps something for herself. So now Gemara says, Upkulo, metaltele habishur. In all these five cases, if you leave over something, even metaltelim, that's considered a shiur. That's not considered all your possessions, except for the case of ketubah. The case of ketubah, and we said this before, why not by ketubah? Demekarke takinu rabbanan. The rabbanan metake, and that ketubah is only collected from karkaot. Metaltele lo takinu rabbanan. On the other hand, by metaltelim, the rabbanan were not mitakein. And again, over here, I'm just pointing out again that this might be different today with the takanat goanim, where you can't collect the ketubah from metaltelim. Might be different. So by the ketubah, if he leaves over in his possession metaltelin, that won't be enough for her to go and collect and say that she had a shiur, and therefore migo she can collect from the metaltelin, she can collect from the property of the children. That's not the case. It has to be something that is karka, or classified as karka, that he leaves over in order for her to collect from that, in order to get a migo to collect from other things, and her silence is not a forgiveness of her ketubah. Amei marmar, metaltele dechtive b'ketubah, v'inu b'inayu abishur. Meir adds an additional dimension here. It says that if the ketubah specifies that there are metaltelim that are meshubah, that part of the lien of the ketubah is on specific type of metaltelim, and they are still around, that is a shiur. Since they are mentioned specifically in the ketubah, and since they are still extant, they're still in existence, therefore we're going to say that she didn't worry about her ketubah. When he gave away all the property to the children, he didn't worry about it. Why? Because she knew that the metaltelim that were guaranteed to be a part of the ketubah are there. So she thinks she can collect those metaltelim, and when she figures out what's left over, she'll get the land. But she still knows that there's something left there, therefore she's not forgiving her ketubah, because she knows there's something to collect from. All right, this is a new case. This case is going to run through all the way today. Tomorrow's daf. But the Gemara just wants to understand, when a person says, Amar nechsai leplanyo, my possessions are to so-and-so. Now here the Rashbam is funny. I will say this only because I wouldn't have defined it this way. If you look down in the Rashbam, Amar nechsai leplanyo, he says, Piskei alochotein, shepuseka gemara. The Gemara here is going to go through a series of psak alochas about what is defined as nechsai. Shechim meira, shamar nechsai leplanyo, Shkimira says that all my possessions are so-and-so. Or inami bibori, a healthy person, shekna besudar, does it a kinyan sudar. Burn ichsai the planyo, and says all my possessions to so-and-so. Uba gemara lefarei, shezu davar karui mamon. He says, what's called mamon? Vehu adin, yamar v'lashon laz, oyer. O'lashon shemechinin ha-mamon. Din nechsai ploni noheg bo. So I don't know, the Rashbam, I would have said that the word nechsai means possessions. A much broader context than... The Rashbam says that it means mamon, which I thought had more of a monetary meaning to it. And that's what's included, that these items have monetary value. Not sure what the Rashbam is really after, unless he thinks the word mamon also means possessions and not necessarily money or kesef, specifically. Again, it's just interesting that the Rashbam narrowed the definition that way. Again, I would have said it, or I would have indicated that we're talking about nechsai means possessions. I'm giving away all my possessions. So what are possessions here? And that's what the Gemara wants to know. First thing is, avda ikrei nechsai. Avodim are classified as nechsim. Why? That's not. Akutev kol nechasav lavdo yatza ben chorim. Person writes all of his possessions to his eved, goes free. Included in those possessions that he's writing to his eved is the eved himself. That's how he goes free. So you see that the term neches is used by an eved. So that means when you say nechsai, you're including avodim. Ara ikrei nechsai. Land is called possessions. Why? That's not. Nechasim sheyesh lehem achayut nikneim bekesef shtar v'chazaka. The Mishnah in Kiddushin says real property can be acquired through kesef shtar v'chazaka. Here it says nechasim. So karka, real property, is called nechasim. So since it's called nechasim, it will be included by kesef shtar v'chazaka. Where it says glima ikrei nechsai. A coat or a jacket is also called nechsai. How do we know that? It's none. The next part of that Mishnah in Kiddushin says, "She'en lachen achrayut." that those that don't have achrayut, what are those that don't have achrayut, don't have recourse? What type of possessions don't have recourse? Those are non-real property. So a coat, which is non-real property, is called shein laim achrayut. Now, truthfully, in the Mishnah in Kedushin, it doesn't say nechasim shein laim achrayut. The header of the Mishnah is nechasim sheish laim achrayut, and then the Mishnah goes to the next term, which is ein laim achrayut. What we're saying here is that the word nechasim applies to each category. Nechasim sheish laim achrayut. Nechasim shein laim achrayut. The Mishnah is going through different terms. So ein nickname elam mishicha. You can only make a kinyan them through kinyan mishicha. But yet, what do you see? That the coat is still called nechasim she'en lahem achrayut. Possessions, non-real property, possessions that don't have recourse. What is that? That is metaltalin, things that are carried around like a glima. Zuzei ikrei nechsai. That also monies are called nechasim. How do you know that? It's none. Ve'eshe'en lahem achrayut niknim in nechasim she'esh lahem achrayut. Bekesef, b'shtar v'chazakah. That's in the Kedushin, the Mishnah says that you can do a kinyan agav. Dvarim, you can do a kinyan agav. You can use karka, real property, to acquire through that real property other items. And we know that kinyan agav works not only by metaltalin, but a kinyan agav works even by kesef, even by money. As opposed to a kinyan sudar, right, only works, we said that ein chapu, ein me'pea nase chalipin. You can't use a kinyan sudar to effect a kinyan on money. But you can use a kinyan agav to acquire money. And we see in the Mishnah in Kedushin, it says, she'en le'achrayut, nignim, nechasim she'esh le'achrayut. Those nechasim that are and don't have recourse, including money, are acquired along those with recourse or real property. So kinyan agav works by money. So you see the word neches is also used by money. So far when you say nechasim, possessions, you've included so far avadim, karkaot, metaltalin, and monies. Now, Kihadra Papa, how can I show you that Kinyan Agav works by Kesef? Because he had this case in Rav Papa, we saw it in Baba Kama, we saw it in Baba Matzia a number of times. How about I trace our alpha Zuzei Bechuzai? He had 12,000 Zuz by Bechuzai. Akninu Nihalei, the Rav Shmuel Bar Acha Gavasifa de Beite. He gave full possession of the monies to Shmuel Bar Acha with the, like, the lintel of his house, the threshold of his house. As he walked in the house, he says, listen, you take possession of the threshold of my house along with the monies. Why did he give it over to Shmuel Bar Acha? If you remember the cases in the Gemara there, they're discussing how can a third party go and collect money on your behalf? Why? Because the debtor will never give him the money. Why? Because the debtor will say to him, I'm not giving you the money because I'm still responsible for the money until it reaches the creditor. And I will only give it to you if you are going to take responsibility from now. Now, the only way you can do that, or the only way they can accept responsibility or say that it's repaid, is if you give possession of that money to the collector. How do you give possession to the collector? You have to be machnan to him. And that's exactly what Rava did over here. Rav Papa did over here, was that he gave possession of the monies to Shmuel Bar Acha. Not that he gave possession of them to him to own, but he gave them in terms of collection. And then he says, he gave him kinyan agav, ki ata nafakta pe atavach. When he returned back from collecting the monies for him, he went out to greet him. At atavach is either a place or a... The other people say that chatzia derech, halfway. He went out halfway way to greet him because he was so excited that he was collecting the money on his behalf. And therefore, he went to greet him to thank him for doing that on his behalf. But what do you see in the case of a papa? That you can do a kinyan agav by kesef. Because that's exactly what he did. So if you can do a kinyan agav by kesef, the Mishnah in Kedushim calls a kinyan agav nechasim. So therefore, you see monies are classified as nechasim. Shtara ikrei nechsai. Hey, shtara is also called a possession. How do I know this? Dama Rabba Bar Yitzchak Shnei Shnarotim. We also had this Gemara right earlier, which is we've had in Kedushin and also earlier here in Baba Basra. So there are two types of shtarot, right? What is that? Amar Zchu B'Stade Ze or Zu. You take possession of this sadeh, the ploni, on behalf of someone else. It's a kinyan, right? You're doing a zochin shaladim shlofen. Abikit v'lo et ashtar. And then write for him a documentation of it. Write him for a mishtar. Chozer b'shtar v'inu chozer b'sadeh. Once he gives the land as a possession to the third party, who's acquiring it on behalf of the recipient, then he can't renege on the gift, but he can renege on the shtar. Whereas, amanachi tifta v'lo et ashtar, he grants him the property on condition that he writes a mishtar, chozer b'mishtar v'in b'sadeh. Then he can renege both on the shtar and the sadeh. What's the difference between them? In the first case, the shtar is a shtar raya. He grants him the property and says to write him a shtar in order to be a rayo that he has the property, meaning that he gives him, it's like a yipui koach, gives him a better situation because he writes him a shtar to say that the gift is a real gift. But the kinyan was already affected when he gave the karka. So as soon as he gave the karka to this third party, he acquired it on behalf of the recipient. When he says to them, write a shtar, that's an additional item. So therefore, he can renege on the shtar because that hasn't been done yet. But the karka, he can't renege on because the gift's already been given. In the second case, the shtar is the kinyan. He's using the shtar as a shtar kinyan. In a shtar kinyan, until the shtar is written, the kinyan's not done. So if the kinyan's not done yet, then he can renege both on the gift of the karka and the shtar. So you have a shtar rayo and a shtar kinyan. So in a shtar rayo, you can only renege on the rayo, you can't renege on the actual kinyan, because the kinyan was affected when you gave the property to this individual. On the other hand, when it comes to the shtar kinyan, you can renege both on the shtar and the karka. Rav Chiya b'Avin Amar Rav Huna, shlosha shtarotein. There are three types of shtarot. Trei hani damran, two that already were defined by Rabbi Yitzchak. Idach is the next one. Imkada mocher v'katav et hashtar. If the seller writes the shtar prior to the sale, right? Ke'oto shaninu, that we learned. Kotzvin shtar mocher afal pishe en lo keachimo. You're allowed to write a shtar for the seller, even though the buyer is not there. Why? Because it's all to the benefit of the buyer, to the detriment of the mocher. Of course you can do something that's to your detriment. You can't do something to the detriment of someone else, but over here it's to your detriment to write the shtar. So if you want to go to the sofer and say, write me a shtar that I sold my property, he can write that for you, because that's to your detriment. But then he says, Kevin Sheikh Zebakarka, right? Once the lokeach, the buyer, takes possession of the karka, nikne shtar komakom shehu. Then the shtar goes into his possession wherever it is. Why? Why did the mocher write the shtar? He wrote the shtar clearly to be a raya, or for the benefit of the lokeach. So that means that he has in mind, as soon as the lokeach takes possession of the karka, he's also giving him the shtar along with it. Ah, how is he koneh the shtar? The shtar is not there. How is he koneh the shtar? Zui sheninu nechasim shein achrayut, niknin in nechasim sheish lem achrayut, kesev shtar chazaka. He's using a kinyan agav. So he's using a kinyan agav. We just saw that a kinyan agav, that the term is nechasim, are the real property, and then the nechasim that you are acquiring along with the karka, those are she'en lahem achrayut. So if nechasim achrayut allow you to acquire agav them, nechasim she'en lahem achrayut. So far we saw nechasim she'en lahem achrayut can be kesef, it also can be a shtar. So since you can affect a kinyan agav by kesef and a kinyan agav by shtar, that means that shtar and kesef are also called nechasim. Because the Mishnah tells you, what can you do in a kinyan agav on? You can take nechasim sheish lem achrayut, real property, and agav that, you can acquire nechasim sheish lem achrayut. So they're called nechasim sheish lem achrayut. So here we see, we did a kinyan agav on, you can do a metazlin, you can do a kinyan agav on kesef, you can do a kinyan agav on shtar. All three of those are going to be classified as nechasim. Now again, we don't need it for metazlin, because you already have that earlier in the Mishnah, that they're called nechasim sheish lem achrayut, you can acquire it through mishicha. But for kesef and shtar, which don't work that way, the kesef and the shtar are called nechasim here, because they are allowed, you're allowed to affect the kinyan agav on a shtar and kesef, and therefore they're included in the term nechasim. Again, tomorrow we're going to continue the sugya. Tomorrow we're going to include other items that are called nechasim. But so far we included avadim, karkaot, glima, metaltalin, right, kesef, and shtar. So far all included under the term nechasim, possessions. We'll stop here.